in precious metals bull markets, and we're in one, by the way. Let's not equivocate about that anymore. When the momentum is established by gold, and that momentum attracts generalist investors to the precious metals market, when those people come down into the precious metals market, market leadership changes from gold to silver. And a short position in a market with the upside volatility that silver has relative to almost any other commodity on the face of the earth, I believe has the ability to deliver truly a religious experience.
You're watching Silver News Daily. Subscribe for more.
Silver is no longer sleeping. It's crouched, tense, and ready to explode. Rick Rule just sounded the alarm, warning that a religious experience is about to strike silver bears as prices roar toward $100 and beyond. For years, silver has sat quietly in the shadow of gold, chronically undervalued, dismissed by mainstream investors. But that's exactly why this moment is so dangerous for those on the wrong side of the trade. All it takes is one spark. And when gold clears $3,700, silver isn't just going to follow. It's going to launch like a coiled spring snapping loose after years of pressure. This isn't a casual uptick. This is a full-throttle hyperdrive phase of the bull market. We're not talking about a slow grind higher. We're talking about the kind of violent, euphoric surge that redefines what people think silver is capable of. Think $28 to $32 in just days. Now imagine what happens when that resistance breaks, the short sellers scramble, and the physical demand overwhelms the paper games. The data is already flashing red, the setup is in place, and the clock is ticking. So what's behind this coming supernova? And why are the world's most seasoned investors calling this the silver event of a generation? Stick around. Because by the end of this, you'll understand exactly why $100 silver might not be a dream. It might be a floor.
I think that I think this is going to turn around and bite them. I wouldn't have said that 3 or 4 years ago, but I do think it's going to turn around and bite them. The Wall Street guys do what's easy. And for 40 years, beginning in 1982, the U.S. dollar was ascendant and precious metals were descendant. Silver being more volatile than gold, it was an easier thing to short. The second thing is that the silver market is extraordinarily leveraged. Many days, 100 or 200 times the amount of silver available for good delivery trades hands in the futures market. What that means is that it's remarkably easy to short for big people. These masters of the universe create short ladders going out 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, 18 months, borrow a fair amount of physical silver, sell that silver in the overnight market when the liquidity is the least, so that they can have the biggest impact on the silver market, and then look for the price signal from the physical market to impact the futures market. If somebody is short, let's say $1 billion worth of silver in the futures market, and somebody uses $50 or $75 million worth of silver, they lose, say, $10 million on selling into the physical market. In effect, you're investing $10 million in your loss in the physical trade to make $50 or $60 million in the long-term trade. This works until it doesn't. I have now been through 3 real bull markets in precious metals in my life. And I don't know why it's true, but what I do know that is true is that in precious metals bull markets, and we're in one, by the way, let's not equivocate about that anymore. When the momentum is established by gold, and that momentum attracts generalist investors to the precious metals market, when those people come down into the precious metals market, market leadership changes from gold to silver. Why? I don't know. Maybe because of the lower unit price. But what I do know is that you won't need Rick Rule to tell you when you're in a silver market. And a short position in a market with the upside volatility that silver has relative to almost any other commodity on the face of the earth, I believe has the ability to deliver truly a religious experience to the short side, irrespective of the structure of the market. These short guys do whatever's easy. I remember in the decade of the 70s, there was a lot of manipulation in precious metals markets to the upside because that was the bias in the market. Wall Street learns thoroughly, but they learn slowly. They do now what made them money for 40 straight years, and they will do it until, like 2008, they learn one of these character-building lessons.
Gold always moves first. It sets the tone, grabs the headlines, and signals what's about to come. But it's what follows gold that changes everything. Historically, when gold breaks into uncharted territory, silver doesn't just follow, it erupts. And right now, all eyes are on one number, $3,700. That's the price point analysts like Rick Rule are watching like hawks. Because once gold crosses that line, silver's explosive catch-up move could begin within days, not weeks. We've seen this before. In 2010, gold quietly climbed above $1,100, and silver responded with a 150% surge in less than a year. In the 1980 bull run, silver rocketed from $11 to nearly $50 in just 2 months as gold broke records. The pattern is clear. Gold ignites, but silver detonates. And what makes this moment even more dangerous for bears is just how tightly silver has been coiled. Despite the recent rally, silver still lags far behind gold in percentage terms. It's up around 14% year to date, while gold is sprinting ahead. That kind of divergence can't last. Not when the fundamental forces are this powerful. Silver isn't just undervalued, it's historically undervalued. The gold to silver ratio is still hovering above 100, a level that screams imbalance. Every time this ratio corrects, silver doesn't just gain ground, it obliterates it. The setup is forming. The gold breakout is inching closer, and silver is quietly loading the spring. When it fires, it won't be a gentle rise. It'll be a full-force surge that catches the entire market flat-footed, and we're just getting started.
Well, that's a great question. I actually answered that question on your show about 2 years ago, Donegan. I don't know if you remember that, but I was thinking about that, in fact, yesterday. I don't know how to answer the question for that listener, but let me tell you how I'm answering it for myself. I think that gold does well during periods of time when people are concerned about the maintenance of their purchasing power in fiat-denominated instruments. So I'm going to keep a substantial position in gold until a few things happen. One, the federal budget is balanced. Two, we have a fiscal regime in place that will handle and service $100 trillion in unfunded entitlement liabilities. Three, until the interest rate on the U.S. Treasury exceeds what I consider to be the real rate of inflation, which I consider to be between 7.5% and 8.5%, and until aggregate federal debt is lower than GDP. Now, if you add those four factors together, it may be that I have to hold my physical gold until the 12th of never. But I don't have any artificial peg in place that says when gold goes to 3,500, I'm going to sell. Or if the gold price falls from 3,500 to 3,200, I'm going to sell. Remember that we measure gold in a floating abstraction called the U.S. dollar. When other forms of savings appear to me more attractive than gold, believe me, I will sell gold and buy those. But measured clearly in a U.S. dollar circumstance, as I say, I'm buying gold to shield my purchasing power from the declining purchasing power available to me in conventional savings products. And until they see those threats disappear, I'll continue to hold my gold.
The fuel behind this coming breakout isn't just gold. It's the entire macroeconomic backdrop collapsing in silver's favor. Inflation may be cooling on paper, but central banks around the world are blinking. The ECB is preparing rate cuts. The Bank of England is under pressure after soft inflation. Powell is hesitating, watching recession risks pile up like kindling. And as real yields fall and the U.S. dollar weakens, silver, unlike almost any other asset, stands to benefit on both fronts, as a hedge and a commodity. On April 16th, silver gained over 1.5% as gold surged and the dollar index tumbled to multi-year lows. Yields across the board collapsed. 10-year yields dropped from 4.59% to 4.26% in just days. The 2-year yield down to 3.77%. This isn't noise. It's a monetary regime shift in motion. And silver thrives in this environment. While gold gets the spotlight, silver's dual identity gives it an edge. monetary metal during crises, industrial metal during growth. Right now, markets are pricing in both fear and stimulus. That's the rare cocktail silver loves. Investors are quietly rotating into hard assets, looking for shelter as fiat confidence falters. At the same time, inflation-adjusted returns in bonds are evaporating and risk assets are wobbling. It's no coincidence silver is already up nearly 17% from its April lows. And the pullbacks? They're being bought with increasing aggression. This isn't speculation, it's reallocation. And as the Fed and its global peers tiptoe toward easing, silver stands at the perfect intersection of monetary desperation and investment opportunity. But this is just one layer. Because beyond the financial setup, silver's real demand engine is about to kick into overdrive.
As long as you say a digital monetary system, not the monetary system, governments will never back their currencies with gold. They will not do it. It imposes a discipline on them. It reduces their power. And people go into politics for power. The beautiful thing about the age that we're living in, Dunnigan, is that with this proliferation of currencies, there doesn't need only to be official sector currencies. A currency can be whatever you and I decide it can be. It can be physical gold or, coming soon to a wallet near you, a gold token. We will see this in the near term. It is highly unlikely that this currency will enjoy any official backing whatsoever. And that doesn't particularly matter to me. I'm a consumer of currencies. And I love the fact that a whole bunch of people are out there trying to invent new ones which will serve me better. A physical gold token backed by reputable organizations, 100% secured by gold and redeemable for gold, I think would be a superb currency. And I believe that it's technologically feasible now, and I think it will occur 2 or 3 years from now. Well, of course... I guess the strict definition of counterfeit has to do with the introduction of illegal money. By definition, then, the U.S. dollar isn't counterfeit because, according to the U.S. government, it isn't illegal. Certainly, one could argue that a floating abstraction, which is to say a dollar, backed by nothing, with the exception of the might and the force of law of the United States government, is by its very nature counterfeit. But I will leave that to the questioner to answer his own rhetorical question. I use U.S. dollars because they're a medium of exchange that's broadly accepted in the jurisdiction in which I live. I maintain a small amount of savings in U.S. dollars because I know that I will need U.S. dollar liquidity. But I save in other asset classes, including gold, not in U.S. dollars.
The trade war is no longer a headline. It's becoming the heartbeat of the global economy, and silver is directly in the blast radius. The U.S. is tightening its grip on critical sectors, launching investigations into imports of semiconductors, pharmaceuticals, and even copper. The Trump administration's latest salvo, a potential 245% tariff wall aimed straight at China. These aren't sound idle threats. These are calculated moves with massive consequences. The semiconductor chokehold alone, targeting NVIDIA and AMD's exports to China, sent the dollar tumbling and safe haven metals surging. And silver, with its deep links to industrial tech, is caught right in the storm. But here's where it gets explosive. While the U.S. makes moves to safeguard national security and onshore production, it's creating bottlenecks in global supply chains. Silver, already in a structural deficit, is now staring down even more supply uncertainty, just as demand accelerates. And it's not just chips and copper. Pharmaceuticals, autos, solar components, everything that uses or affects silver's value chain is under siege. Even the World Trade Organization is slashing its global trade forecasts, warning of a potential 1.5% contraction if these tariffs are fully implemented. That's the backdrop. A fractured global economy with trust breaking down and nations scrambling to secure resources. This kind of uncertainty is rocket fuel for safe haven flows. And while gold captures the spotlight, silver, less liquid, more volatile, and more reactive, responds with amplified intensity. Trump may have temporarily exempted some electronics from the tariffs, but the threat lingers. The trade war isn't over, it's just entering a more strategic phase. And with every escalation, the case for silver strengthens. Supply chains are fraying, risk premiums are climbing, and the market is waking up to silver's unique role in this geopolitical chess game. The setup is almost too perfect, but we're not done. Because the real demand story isn't just about fear, it's about function. And what's happening in silver's industrial world is staggering.
I would just ask your listeners to consider that given that poll after poll after poll show that Americans wouldn't pay tax if there wasn't an enforcement mechanism, that would suggest that taxes are either slavery, but more probably extortion, because they only take by force the fruits of your labor for 5 months as opposed to 12 months of the year. By extension, of course, people need to ask whether they want to be party to the extortion of third parties or whether they want to be victims of extortion themselves. But I won't belabor this. People didn't come to listen to us to hear some old cranky old libertarian complain about taxes. But I think what will happen is that silver will maintain its purchasing power. So in addition to having silver, one must have a lifestyle that one can live within. You know, in the decade of the 70s, Dunnigan, as you will notice, I was there. the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar deteriorated by 75%, which is to say that $1,000 in 1980 bought you $250 worth of goods and services at 1970s pricing. What precious metals really did, although they overshot, was they maintained your purchasing power. So for the gentleman, yes, store some of your wealth in silver, which is highly likely to maintain and perhaps outshoot in terms of purchasing power. But also consider aspiring to a lifestyle that's well within your ability to sustain. Both parts are important. You almost certainly need to be prepared for a 50% down move in bull markets. Precious metals are notoriously volatile, and silver is more volatile than the rest. I'm reminded of the decade of the 1970s, where in the beginning of the decade, gold was up from $35 an ounce to $200 an ounce. In early 1975, the Fed, concerned about inflation, raised the interest rate, which cratered the gold price. It fell from $200 an ounce to $100 an ounce in 9 short months. Of course, the Fed lost its nerve because it cratered the bond market and the stock market, too. When the Fed reversed course, the gold price ran from $100 an ounce to $850 an ounce. What's important to remember is that if the underlying conditions favoring a bull market stay intact, the bull market will stay intact too, but it will certainly test your patience, your faith, and your bank account in the interim. And I think probably we're due in the near term for a rest in terms of the gold price. It's also worthy to note that silver has not, as of yet, kept up with gold's pace.
Behind the scenes of this macro mayhem, silver's industrial engine is roaring louder than ever. The Silver Institute just confirmed what the market has suspected. Industrial demand hit a fresh all-time high in 2024, soaring to 680.5 million ounces. That's not a fluke. It's the fourth record-breaking year in a row, and the trajectory is only pointing higher. Why? Because the global economy is electrifying, digitizing, and decarbonizing. And silver is essential to every step of that transformation. Solar panels, EVs, AI hardware, advanced grid infrastructure. Silver isn't just involved, it's irreplaceable. Take solar alone. Photovoltaic applications are eating up more silver than ever before, with no substitute on the horizon. Governments are throwing billions into green infrastructure, and every solar cell needs silver to conduct light into energy. The more we push toward net zero, the deeper silver gets embedded into the backbone of our future. Then there's the electric vehicle boom. EVs aren't just cars, they're rolling silver vaults. Every connection, every battery, every circuit leans on silver's unmatched conductivity. And with EV sales forecast to explode over the next 5 years, silver demand is positioned to run parallel, if not faster. And it doesn't stop there. Artificial intelligence, 5G networks, smart devices, defense technologies, silver's threaded through them all. The AI revolution alone, often talked about in terms of data and software, relies on hardware that guzzles silver at the foundational level. But while demand screams higher, supply is not keeping pace. The silver market posted a 148.9 million ounce deficit in 2024. That's a structural shortfall, not a seasonal blip. With mining capacity lagging and few new projects coming online, we're heading straight into a collision. Surging need, shrinking availability. This is the kind of pressure that can't be solved with paper contracts. It builds until the only release valve is price. And as demand overtakes supply year after year, silver becomes more than just an asset. It becomes a battleground. But there's another side to this fight, one that's kept silver suppressed for far too long. And when that breaks, the true volatility begins.
I'm particularly still attracted to the uranium business, particularly because of the disconnect between the term price and the spot price. I'm attracted to uranium, too, because it's attracting so much hate. There's nothing I like quite so much as hate. It's wild that when I would post things that were dubious about uranium, and uranium was over $100 a pound, people questioned my sanity. Now that I'm talking about buying uranium again, when it is half that price, people still question my sanity. And while my sanity is in fact suspect, not on this particular topic. With regards to copper, my nervousness about physical funds around copper is that copper is cheap enough that the costs associated with a physical trust, particularly storage costs, relative to the price of commodities, makes those funds an inefficient way to hold copper. So, yes, I own a fair bit of the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, and I own none of the Copper Trust whatsoever. I'm a shareholder of West Red Lake. I'm nervous about the fact that it would appear to me that they are moving or attempting to move that mine to full production without a reasonable bankable feasibility study. These are very high-quality people, and it's a good asset. And they acquired the producing infrastructure ludicrously cheaply, so they may pull it off. I'm always nervous about responding to market pressures to move things to production before they're likely completely ready, and I have that nervousness here. You will note, however, that despite that nervousness, I'm long the stock.
Well, the merger that circumvents the regulators doesn't circumvent the regulators. What it does is prevent the FDIC from not issuing us a bank charter. And they didn't not issue us one. They just didn't issue us one. We were stuck in regulatory limbo for 4 years. We have sought to avoid that problem by purchasing a small bank in Wisconsin. That bank itself requires the permission of the regulator, and the change of business plan also requires the permission of the regulator. It doesn't require FDIC permission, however. It requires a tougher regulator called the Office of the Comptroller of Currency. Ironically, that tougher regulator approved us last time in 97 days. In answer to the question, my suspicion is that the recapitalization proposal and the application acceptance will occur in the calendar month of June, and that we will be open for business in the calendar month of June or the calendar month of July. Believe me, all systems are ready to go. We've had a long time to prepare for this moment. We're engaged in, I think, very constructive dialogue with our regulators. And it's never that the communication with the FDIC was unconstructive. It's just that the FDIC, I guess, became politicized or something. And we would have six-month periods of time where there was no communication whatsoever, which was sort of frustrating.
For over a decade, silver has been caught in a quiet war, one waged not with headlines, but with paper. Institutional short positions have long weighed on silver like an anchor, distorting its true market value. But now the tide is shifting. With physical demand surging and supply chains tightening, the walls are closing in on the shorts. This isn't just a theory. It's already visible in the numbers. Total known ETF holdings of silver have climbed to over 717 million ounces, up 1.5% year to date. Investors are quietly, steadily accumulating, and every new ounce held in trust squeezes the available float tighter. The short squeeze isn't a matter of if, it's a matter of pressure. When institutional players are forced to cover, whether by margin calls, redemptions, or simply the fear of getting caught on the wrong side of a runaway rally, the result is explosive. Think back to the 2021 Reddit-fueled silver spike, prices briefly surged, ETF demand spiked, and mints around the world ran dry. That was a flash in the pan. This time, the squeeze is systemic. It's being driven by fundamentals, not memes. And the positions are much larger, much older, and far more dangerous. But here's the kicker. Unlike stocks, silver has a physical component. You can't just print more ounces. When investors start demanding delivery, when industrial users scramble to secure future supply, the paper games break down. That's the moment price suppression fails. That's when panic sets in. And with silver already climbing from $28 to nearly $33 in a matter of weeks, the stress on short positions is mounting fast. Add in geopolitical risk, monetary easing, and record industrial consumption, and the trap is set. The smart money knows this. The quiet accumulation, the buildup in ETF holdings, the softening of resistance levels, all signs that the breakout isn't just coming, it's accelerating. And once the technical barrier gives way, it could unleash a move so sharp and so sudden that even seasoned traders will be left scrambling. The pressure is building. The walls are closing in. And at $33 over 12, we're staring at the gateway.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think a central bank digital currency is what our government and most governments would like to use. There has been talk about doing with digital currency what the Zimbabweans did with paper currency, which is to say to put an expiration date on it. And there will be a group of people around there who have no sense of humor for that. I don't see that sort of draconian future coming to the United States right now, if for no other reason that there are 400 million guns in private circulation in the United States, and there's only so much aggravation Americans can take. There are easier ways for our government to steal from us right now than to steal our currency. They can cause inflation, which is very popular. They don't get criticized for it. In fact, they get reelected for it. They can run up debt and deficits, which is a different form of theft. They can raise taxes, particularly on the rich. They don't need to confiscate your currency. They don't need to confiscate your IRA. Doing so would run a risk that passive opposition to the government became active opposition. And the government is aware of the fact that there are 400 million guns in private circulation. What I do, I write the FinCEN letter on myself. I tell the government how much I'm moving and where, and I tell them why. I've actually filed a FinCEN on myself saying that I was wiring $50,000 to Canada for the purpose of buying physical gold outside the reach of the U.S. government. I put that on a U.S. government document. I suspect that those documents go in a great big warehouse where nobody reads them until they want you. And if they want you, they're going to get you. So I know that the gentleman is looking for a more covert answer than that, but I'm not a very covert guy. I'm just not. I do what I do. I document it as thoroughly as I can so that I avoid a perjury or an obstruction charge. And I live.
Every bull market has its line in the sand, a level that separates noise from breakout. For silver, that line is $33.12. It's not just a number. It's a trigger. On April 16th, silver closed at $32.90, brushing against this resistance like a boxer testing the ropes before the knockout punch. This isn't just technical analysis, it's market psychology. Above $33 at 12s, the sellers thin out, the shorts panic, and the chase begins. The next stop, $34. Then, possibly $35. In a blur, but break that first barrier, and the narrative changes from what if to what now. We're already seeing the behavior shift. Since its low of $28.15 just weeks ago, silver has gained almost 17%. That's not a bounce. It's a launch sequence. Each dip is being bought. Each consolidation is tighter. And while the price flirts with resistance, the fundamentals beneath it are only growing stronger. Physical demand is climbing. The dollar index continues to sag. Real yields are falling. Every traditional obstacle is weakening just as momentum accelerates. Technically, $33.12 is the ignition point. Sentiment-wise, it's the moment bulls go from hopeful to aggressive and bears begin to fold. But let's not forget what stands behind this price action. The structural deficit, the short squeeze setup, the global macro tailwinds, the industrial boom. This isn't a trade, it's a trend. And above $33.12, the market will be forced to price that in fast. Support has been confirmed at $32.52 and $32.20. meaning the foundation is solid. If silver punches through resistance, the next rally could be fast, furious, and fundamentally justified. Because once $34 is breached, the talk of $50 turns from fantasy to forecast. And beyond that, well, that's where things get spiritual for the bears.
That's a bigger question, probably. I think history rhymes as opposed to repeats, and I think that many of the lessons of history will be useful for us. There are, of course, some differences. There are more of us. Information travels faster. There's much more credit in society, so a dislocation will inconvenience some more than it's inconvenienced others. And, of course, we need to remember that through technology, unlike any period in recorded history, we have the fairly easy ability to kill everybody on Earth if the big thinkers that run us make some mistakes and lose their sense of humor. So I guess the stakes are higher. But, you know, our ability to muddle through is higher, too. When I do my truly scary arithmetic about the aggregate obligations of the U.S. government relative to their ability to steal from me and how hopeless that looks, I need to remember that the circumstances has looked lousy for 50 years. And the United States in particular is still a culture where a group of kids can commandeer a garage in Sunnyvale and out pops Google or Apple or Facebook or something like that, which is to say, despite the fact that I'm very nervous about our collective stupidity, I'm delighted that through technology, our individual creativity and tenacity has at least thus far financed our collective stupidity. So while the arithmetic would suggest that pessimism should be the order of the day, I remain long-term. For instance, I've been adding a little bit of platinum speculatively. The bullish case for me around platinum is, I guess, twofold. One, the price declines have accompanied Russia's need for cash. That happened in 1992. When the Russians need cash, they sell whatever they have on the shelf, and that has included platinum and palladium, whether the world's second largest producer. The story around platinum and palladium has been hurt because the big thinkers of the world, you know, Greta Thunberg, Angela Merkel, people like that, have convinced us that the internal combustion engine is going the way of the dodo, and the principal use of platinum is in auto catalysts. My suspicion is that the internal combustion engine will be the primary mode of global transportation even after I've shed my mortal coil, and I'm a fairly healthy 72-year-old. What that means is that the expectation for the price of platinum in the future is grievously understated. I would ask your questioners to look around for groups of young people with protest signs saying, more smog, more smog. The truth is, if the internal combustion engine lasts till 2065, the need for autocatalysts will last until 2065, too. Meanwhile, on the supply side, platinum is produced really in two countries, South Africa and Russia. Any political disruption in either place, not an unlikely event, would be very difficult on the supply side of platinum. And given that the demand side of platinum is price inelastic, that could do wonderful things to price. Is this going to happen for sure? I have no earthly idea. Is it a speculation worth considering if one has surplus cash and the emotional stability to handle volatility? Yeah, absolutely. Something I've done.
This is the moment it all converges. Gold creeping toward $3,700 and $100, silver coiled tighter than it's been in over a decade, and every fundamental pressure point straining at once. When silver breaks out, and make no mistake, it's not an if. The rally won't just be powerful, it will be transformational. A move to $100 isn't a fantasy anymore. It's a mathematical response to years of suppression, a supply chain on the brink, and a tidal wave of industrial and investment demand finally cresting. And when that wall is breached, the response from the market will be violent, euphoric, and blindingly fast. Rick Rule didn't call it a religious experience for nothing. For the bears, this will feel like Judgment Day. For those paying attention, it's deliverance. The spring is uncoiling, the breakout is coming, and silver is about to enter a hyperdrive bull market that could rewrite everything we thought we knew about precious metals. If you want to stay ahead of the wave, hit that subscribe button. You don't want to be caught sleeping when silver starts to run. And remember, This is not financial advice. Always speak with a licensed financial advisor before making any investment decisions.
Well, the merger that circumvents the regulators doesn't circumvent the regulators. What it does is prevent the FDIC from not issuing us a bank charter. And they didn't not issue us one. They just didn't issue us one. We were stuck in regulatory limbo for 4 years. We have sought to avoid that problem by purchasing a small bank in Wisconsin. That bank itself requires the permission of the regulator, and the change of business plan also requires the permission of the regulator. It doesn't require FDIC permission, however. It requires a tougher regulator called the Office of the Comptroller of Currency. Ironically, that tougher regulator approved us last time in 97 days. In answer to the question, my suspicion is that the recapitalization proposal and the application acceptance will occur in the calendar month of June, and that we will be open for business in the calendar month of June or the calendar month of July. Believe me, all systems are ready to go. We've had a long time to prepare for this moment. We're engaged in, I think, very constructive dialogue with our regulators. And it's never that the communication with the FDIC was unconstructive. It's just that the FDIC, I guess, became politicized or something. And we would have six months periods of time where there was no communication whatsoever, which was sort of frustrating.